Hi, everyone. Welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm here today with Larkin Sanders of The Clever Clarinetist in Kansas City, Missouri. She owns her own music studio. She's a performing clarinetist. She is a founding member of the Taney Como Festival Orchestra and appears as a soloist across the United States. She earned her doctorate degree of music in clarinet performance from Florida State University, and she holds a master's degree in clarinet performance from Michigan State University. She also scuba dives and does sewing and found object art. Welcome. That's such a cool
view. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So it looks like you really focused on clarinet most of your life. So when did you decide to go down like the that's kind of unusual to go down the academic route as a musician? When and what inspired you to do that?
So it's actually very normal if you're in the classical genre. It's very abnormal if you are outside of classical music. Basically, like, you don't stand a chance if you don't go into academia as a classical musician. So I started playing violin when I was 2. My dad is a professional musician. I took lessons on violin until I was 14. My school didn't have a band program, so I played clarinet in band, and that instrument was more compatible with me. So I started that when I was 11. And I realized that, I was more compatible with the clarinet, and it really, like, my ability really soared really quickly on that instrument. And I always knew I wanted to be a professional musician. It was just a matter of which route was I going to take. So clarinet ended up being my primary instrument, altar school. Oh, yeah, I sang, too, because I'm from Branson.
Yeah. It's hard to sing in clarinet at the same time.
Yeah, but singing helps your clarinet playing.
Really?
Yes. Singing helps. If you're, again, any kind of musician, singing helps your musicianship in general. Like, we're all required to do a certain amount of singing in school, mm-hmm. whether it's just for music theory purposes, or some universities require that you do take some certain amount of, like, voice lessons or choir participation throughout your degree program.
Probably helps your ear, right?
Yes.
Cool. So what, you said your dad was a musician. What kind of instrument did he play?
He was a professional drummer. I guess he's a professional drummer again, but his classical studies were all in cello. But his living was made primarily through, or his whatever income came to him through, drum performance. I was born in New York because he was getting a master's in music composition from the Stony Brook, State University of New York, Stony Brook. And he was also playing in the city quite a bit, like on Broadway. That was his, like, main thing. But my parents are both very Southern, and my mother kind of made an ultimatum because she never really assimilated to New York culture. And I had a baby brother at that point, and she was like, I'm going. I hope you'll come with us. And he did.
And to Branson?
Yeah, there was a pit stop in Fayetteville for a minute, but yeah.
I've never heard of Fayetteville.
Yeah.
Wow. And what was it like? I wanted to ask you about that. Like, Branson is one of the more performative places you could live, right, in middle America. Depends, I mean, I guess not if you're doing classical, it doesn't.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It depends on what you're doing. And Branson is kind of a weird niche of music. I never saw myself there. It's not a matter of seeing, actually. Like, it was never going to happen for what I do. And also, culturally, it doesn't make sense for me to try to make a life in Branson. But that's part of the reason why I started the Taney Como Festival Orchestra, was so that I would have opportunities for, not just for myself, but for my friends and colleagues that I love and appreciate to perform in my hometown.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about the Taney Como Festival.
Sure. So I started the Taney Como Festival Orchestra when I was working on a master's degree at Michigan State. I had just attended a friend's music festival that she started, and she invited me as, like, the only clarinet player and as the resident composer for the festival. Again, I'm, like, I don't know, 22 years old at this point, so it was a big deal for mm-hmm. me. And I saw how it worked in her hometown, and I said, well, my hometown has got a little bit more going on. And so I called my mom, and she was down to help me out with it. So I basically learned how to, like, create a nonprofit organization in Missouri and how to do all that, like, legal paperwork. I filed all my 501c3 paperwork myself and all that stuff.
So, like, how did you do all this? I mean, you're performing, you're teaching, you have a retail shop, you're helping, you have this, like, music festival. Like, how do you?
Now I'm very organized. At this time, I was just a student, and the only business I had going was TFO. Clever Clarinetist came much later, probably in, like, the ninth or tenth year of TFO. The TFO is going to be 15 this year, which is kind of crazy.
Wow. And where do you guys hold your, I mean, do you have, like, a weekend or something, and where physically do you do that?
So it's 2 weeks in Branson, Missouri. If you want to find all the details, everything is pretty transparent and laid out on our website, TaneyComoFestivalOrchestra.org. 2 weeks in Branson, we bring in musicians from all over the country. You have to audition and be accepted to get in, and everyone is put up with a host family. So no one, you don't have to. It's unique amongst music festivals because there is no tuition and there are very few expenses incurred when you attend the festival. It's a very important part of a musician's education, like part of their academic education, that when in the summertime, when they're not in school, that they are participating in a summer music festival. And most summer music festivals have cost thousands of dollars in tuition, and TFO doesn't cost anything. So that's how it continues to grow.
I mean, that's a thing, isn't it? Like, why the, you know, a lot of particularly classical musicians are people with means, right? Because they have the ability to, you know, send their kids to something for thousands of dollars, you know, and instruments are not inexpensive, lessons are not, right, you know, school, all that stuff. Yeah.
I'm not sure how much credible research there is on that topic of classical musicians coming from a certain, like, income bracket or socioeconomic bracket. I've definitely worked with my fair share of colleagues who did not come from such a background, who are making it work for themselves.
That's fantastic.
I come from a very supportive and musical family, so I'm privileged in that way, but I can't speak to any real evidence about it.
Right. So when did you transition into, like, saying, I'm going to become a full-on entrepreneur and start my own retail, you know, retail shop in addition to lessons and performance? And
so after I started TFO, the first season happened right after I graduated from Michigan State and was transitioning to Florida State for my doctorate. I was just living at home in Branson for that summer. And at FSU, they have not only, like, it's a massive music school, and I was going there to study clarinet specifically, but they also had all these, like, specialty programs for graduate students, especially for doctoral students. And it basically was like half a master's worth of credits, and you got, like, an extra piece of paper when you graduated. And everyone had to pick something. I mean, it wasn't required, but it was required. Like, it was like you were expected to do something. So I picked arts administration as my specialty with the goal of enhancing my music festival and just making that better. I wasn't sure at the time if TFO would be substantial enough for it to be a full-time job or not, but I was going to try. And so I was able to take courses in things like fundraising and grant writing, and, like, the fundraising class, like, totally changed my perspective on how to view taking money from other people in general.
How so?
For example, the first year I spent fundraising for TFO, I basically had a letter that I wrote and a little brochure that I designed, and I was going around to local businesses in Branson and talking to managers and talking about why they should support the TFO, but also being very like, this is our first year and we have no money, please help.
Give us $50.
Yes. And basically pooping my pants as I'm driving around Branson about it. Like, my stomach was literally so upset the whole time. And the first day of fundraising class, the teacher said, you're stewards of philanthropy. Right. People have something to give and they want to support quality causes, but they need help and guidance in doing so. And you are here to help and guide them. And that just, like, blew my mind.
The janitor, you're the concierge.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. You're not Robin Hood, even. You're not, like, trying to take money from them. Like, you are helping them better their community and the world around them through what you're doing, especially in a nonprofit situation. Honestly, I think in any art situation, you're helping people make the community better. So, I mean, and that helped me when I decided to start Clever Clarinetist as well. Like, that's my general mindset about, like, selling things from to people, to, like, helping them make good choices, helping them spend their money in a way that, like, benefits their life. But at the end of my doctoral degree, I started working for a company called, little company called Diderio. It's actually one of the larger manufacturers.
Yeah, heard of that.
Yeah. They're famous for strings. It's an old Italian family that immigrated to New York like a couple hundred years ago. And they made guitar strings forever. And they also make...
I buy their strings. That's why I know.
There you go. Yeah. And they do orchestra strings. And then they also bought this reed making company called Rico out in California and have turned it into this like super pro, wonderful reed and mouthpiece. I don't know. Portion of their company. And they were experimenting at the time with soft marketing. So they were trying to get a representative in each state that would basically go to schools and trade shows and universities and like different things. It just rep the brand basically.
Right.
But their goal first was education, like do something educational and then use the products to like.
Sounds smart to me.
It's so smart. I mean, at the end of that first year, they said their sales increased by 90%. Just, which is massive.
I thought you were going to say like 20%.
No, 90%.
Wow.
Right, which like further reinforces everything I do that like as long as I'm up, it seems like the gratification is long, not short and immediate when you're using like an educational approach in a business like this. But it works. And in my opinion, for something like this is the only way to do it. So I worked for Diderio as a Woodwind Method clinician for 5 years, I think. And I also in that time moved to Kansas City. Like I did it for a year in Florida. And then I felt like my future in Florida was really bleak after graduating. So I decided to move back to Kansas City where I had people, an airport, and mentorship. Those were like my three things. And within about a year, I started working full time as the marketing director and community engagement director for the Friends of Chamber Music, which is an upscale chamber music series here in town. But the boss and I clashed after about... 8 months of my employment. And I just felt like totally paralyzed. Like I couldn't do anything because I thought she found me wholly incompetent and like, didn't like anything I was doing. So it forced me to really like take a hard look at what I was doing. Also, there was no clarinet playing in that job. And I didn't like that. Apparently my soul didn't like that. I had taken to like taking my clarinet to the office and hiding it in the basement and like going to the bathroom to like go downstairs and play my scales.
Something out of a sad movie.
Right. Exactly. So I'm like, what are we doing here? But like playing in the community band wasn't like enough for me. You know, doing volunteer music wasn't satisfying my musical itch.
Because you want to like keep growing and developing and play with people that are at your level.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. And man, I just felt lousy all the time, spiritually, emotionally, and otherwise.
There's something like horribly, horribly, like there's a horrible feedback loop that when you think somebody doesn't like you or think you're incompetent, then every little tiny thing you do that's not perfect, it like amplifies their...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people fall into this trap professionally. It's not even really a trap. It's just like an unfortunate situation. I think it's really common in nonprofits like this because the staffs are so small.
Yeah. And they're doing it because they love it. They're not doing it for the money. Yeah. I've a long history in nonprofits.
Yeah.
Arts nonprofits. So yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, that's exactly where I was. I mean, I got to work with like some of the coolest musicians in the world doing that job. But my favorite thing was taking like string quartets to Title I schools and doing concerts for little children. Like that was the thing that like made me happiest. And my boss would be like, I think this is a waste of time, which was just like soul crushing to me. Yeah. So I'm like, what's the point then? Like, I know you're upset because their parents aren't going and buying concert tickets, but what you're not thinking about is that educational component, right? Like these kids are going to want to come to concerts later.
Right. Right. Like,
that's the point. Not to get their parents to come now.
Light something up in them, right?
Yes. Like get them to join orchestra later or what, you know, like that's what it's about. Not about buying tickets today. Anyway, I digress. I was just really struggling in that job and I thought about what did I like doing? You know, I knew that clarinet had to be a bigger part of my life than it was. And I was still working at Diderio and I loved that job. Like every time I had a Diderio event, it was like the highlight of my week, month, year.
It was educationally based, you're saying?
Yeah, educationally. Yeah. And there's that retail component too, of like repping a brand that I like believed in. And I got this idea of like, maybe you should do your own retail thing. So at that point, I did have endorsements from basically every piece of my clarinet. So like the instrument maker, I had an artist status with Selmer Paris. I also had an artist endorsement with Selmer Paris. I had it through D'Addario, my mouthpiece and reeds. I had it through my ligature with Silverstein, and my barrel with Brian Corbin. And I was a proponent of this kind of newfangled tool called a Reed Geek. And anyway, I was friends with the Selmer representative in Kansas City. I met with her and I said, I kind of want to start like a professional woodwind store. And she's like, that's great. But do you actually play any other woodwinds? And I was like, I play the recorder. And she said that I don't know about that.
Yeah, I understand that.
She's like, you know, I think you're onto something, but I think you should start just with what you know. Just start with like Selmer clarinets, your D'Addario stuff, get some Reed Geeks, do the barrel, like get something from these people that like believe in you and that you believe in their stuff. And so I did. And I started with like everything on consignment and was only doing those brands. And it just kind of came together really well. And I was able to quit that job at the Friends of Chamber Music. And I took on a couple of like adjunct teaching jobs that I actually just left as well, like this year.
So you're saying that retail did not arise like in conjunction with lessons. It wasn't like you were giving people lessons and they're like, oh, we're going to need clarinets to have lessons.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, not really. I mean, that was definitely like a reason because I had a couple of, I worked at even at like a bigger store in town for a couple months and I was really miserable, mostly because I was just dealing with like ugly parents who didn't see the value in like renting a clarinet and having to buy reeds regularly for their student. And I do remember like kind of losing my patience with one time. And a friend who still works for that company will say like that woman still comes in and like looks for you.
They're like, can't you just repair the crack in the reed?
Yeah, no. Like, no. I said something like that must have struck fear into her heart, which was, do you want your child to enjoy this or not?
Damn good question.
Right. Like, yeah. Do you want your kid to actually enjoy and thrive in band or just not like it? And I didn't mean it to be like a scarring question. It was just the honest question on my mind at the time. But so I had those experiences, but I also had an experience with another larger music store where I was trying, one of my students was ready to buy a professional clarinet and they just like couldn't get it together. It took them months to get this specific clarinet ordered. And I realized that when I decided to start Clever Clarinetist, that one of the advantages I had was that I would only do professional things. So most music stores, especially things that operate on like a franchise basis, are working in volume or like profiting in volume of like renting instruments to kids.
Mm-hmm.
So those margins become massive and the margins on a professional clarinet, for example, just like can't really compete and they can be a like financial burden. You buy one and it just like sits around because it's not really what you do. And also it's like it's a big investment for the customer, too. And if you don't have like a competent person on staff to help them make that decision, it can be
they're going to go with the cheap one because they don't know.
It's going to be a bad experience for everyone. And like it's never going to work out. So. Yeah, that was part of it for sure. But I think if I'm being honest about it, the thing that up front that got me to move over there is like my own personal gratification, I guess, and like wanting to get out of that environment. But also seeing like from working at D'Addario that like educating people, you know, stewarding their purchases and helping them make good decisions and things that help their musical life. Help everything, makes the whole experience worthwhile.
Yeah. So what would you say is like the most challenging part of either, you know, retail or of all the things that you're currently doing? What would you say is like the most challenging?
Yeah. I mean, for me, like managing growth and growing pains is really challenging because I still like am doing all the business stuff from like a point of intuition and learning on the job. My expertise comes from like playing the actual instruments and music.
Right.
And I can learn a lot on the internet, but I'm never going to catch up to like Sweetwater or woodwind and brasswind. I'm never going to like have that level of
expertise. Would you really want to be them, though?
No. A clever clarinetist would never work on that scale. So I feel like a laboratory or clever clarinetist is a little, or that's how I've decided to see it. Like, we can try things, and I don't like taking huge risks. And ironically, like, I started a clarinet store, but like, I'm a little bit risk adverse. So growing for me is a challenge. And
maybe you used up your risk tolerance already.
Right.
Starting the store, and then you're like, nope, no more.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way sometimes. I mean, I say that, but I've also like, have experienced a lot of growth since the business started. It's about 5 years old, and I now carry 3 different clarinet manufacturers, and I carry like 5 or 6 different barrel makers, lots of different mouthpieces. Like, I carry so many more things than the like one of each.
Right.
When I started, and it is like a profitable venture now too.
Yeah,
a little bit.
5 years, it would have to be a profitable venture. You would have given up by now.
Right. Exactly. And I've also like, I've experienced like all the worst, I think, that humanity has to offer. Like, as far as the business is concerned, I've had fraud and theft, and learning how to overcome that has been like a big challenge.
And it's soul crushing, really.
It is.
Especially when it's like your mission, that your business is like your mission. It's not just like, oh, I sell clarinet.
No. Right. Yeah. It's not, I don't just sell clarinet. I'm like, I want your clarinet playing life to be the best it can be. You just stole that. Okay. So that also makes me risk adverse. I don't know. Sometimes now I'm thinking I should give myself a little bit more credit. But anyway, I would say those are the big challenges. Like being able to accept that, like, okay, it's time to try something new.
Are you still happy, though, that this is where you're at, right? Mm-hmm. Despite the challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. I would rather be doing this than any of the things I've done in the past. That's for sure. I know I'm not incompetent, so I definitely like won't.
Obviously not. Yeah.
I have a lot of supportive people in my life. My partner is an engineer with an entrepreneurial spirit as well. And my parents are really supportive. And like when I have days where I get to sell a clarinet to someone, it's like the best.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what would you say to somebody who's like, I want to do this thing that I think might work and it's really what I'm passionate about. But what would you say to that person? Like, would you say, go for it? Would you say, make a solid plan and then go for it? Or would you say, you know, like totally, you know, like get an investor? Or what would you say to somebody who wanted to make a leap like that? I mean, you know, it's not a huge leap for you because you have this huge background and right. But what would you say?
I would say, go get on the internet and start Googling your ideas. See if they exist and on what scale do they exist. And if they do exist, what do you have to offer that sets your situation apart from everyone else? Like I would start there before even making any kind of plan, because you don't want to, I would really discourage someone against like diving into a dream only to find out that it's already been done and at a scale that can never be topped either. So like, when I wanted to start Clever Clarinetist, I met with somebody in the industry and was like, I want to do this. And I started in a completely different scale in my, you know, but came back with a lot of really good information. And I sat down with my computer and looked at like, okay, where's the closest like clarinet specialty store to Kansas City? And it's in St. Louis.
Yeah, right. That's not close.
No, it's not close. And like, there's not like everything is like band and orchestra focused in this region.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big like professional instrument seller in Minneapolis, but like those are far away.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't part of what you're really bringing to purchases is like your personal connection with people and like something that a big band music store wouldn't necessarily be able to offer?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and that's part of like why that's one of the ways the model works really well for me, is that oftentimes people will come buy an instrument and they will enroll in lessons or vice versa. They'll enroll in lessons and take lessons for a little bit and then decide it's time to like get fully outfitted or get an upgrade. So yeah, like that model actually really helps me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I bet I've taken many music lessons and none of them. I know a lot of music stores that offer lessons, but I know a lot of places offer lessons don't have instruments.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They either like do one or the other, or if they do offer lessons, like, I don't know. I've always been suspicious of people who like will teach lessons for any instrument. It's like, which one do you play? Which one?
Yeah. I mean, to get somebody started, maybe, Right.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to like add or convey?
No, I said a lot, I think. I always have a lot to say. It'll be an interesting year because I'm currently expecting my first child. I know, it's exciting.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. He will be joining the world in March. It's very exciting. And so that'll be the next challenge, is balancing the stuff with the adventure that is motherhood.
Totally worth it. Totally not easy. Yeah.
I'm excited though.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thank you. Thanks for coming on. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Yeah. Likewise, Karen. Thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to thank you so much for joining us. And I hope you really enjoyed that interview. If you want to learn more about how we support women in their second wind, check us out at secondwindwomen.com. Let's hope that your second wind pushes you even farther than you had imagined. Thanks.